Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parents in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parents in Hell with...
Harry, can you say Rob Beckett?
Rob Beckett.
And can you say Josh Widdicombe?
Josh Widdicombe.
That's really good. Well done.
I'm a big fan of that one, Josh.
That was good. This is Harry.
It was cute, and the mum sounded fun as well.
Yeah. What, Rach from Norwich? She does sound fun.
You know, Norwich is quite a nice place.
Oh, it's
against
very nice,
all
yeah.
press coverage. Do you know what? Norwich, lovely people, lovely place. I think just because of the location where it is, it gets a bad rep because there's nowhere else to go once you get there.
Yeah, it's difficult.
It's the end.
There's no motorway, is there?
No, it's a tough... Oh, it's so dark. Thetford Forest on the way back at 11... Oh, my God, it's so dark. Such a dark drive.
Let's focus on the positives of Norwich, Rob.
Oh, go on then. You first.
That's a lovely theatre. And I'd say quite an iconic football team. They wear a different colour to a lot of teams. And also, Rach and Rich live there with their son, Harry, who's 19 months old. They have been waiting until he could do a passable repeat of your names for a long time. So we've been listeners from the beginning. Absolutely love the show, even before Harry came along. And now on the home stretch of pregnancy number two, due in May.
Oh, congratulations.
Keep being your sexy and relatable selves, and thanks for all the laughs. You make this utter carnage of parenting malarkey seem normal. Big love. Rach and Rich from Norwich, four kisses.
Four kisses. That's okay, that's nice. A lot of babies at the moment. My mate's just had a baby. I had to drop off a water bottle for him, like that he'd left at my house. And because I was like, they only live like 20 minutes away. I was like, if anything you need, because she had to have a C-section. So she was like, obviously it makes everything a bit harder, doesn't it, afterwards?
Yeah, you've basically had an operation. Well, you have had an operation.
Yeah. Well, it's an operation, isn't it?
It's major surgery.
It's major surgery. And I went round there and... That, like, they look so tired, bless them. It was like the baby was so cute, but because they'd been in hospital a couple of days, and that just transported me back to having a little one. And it's like that first few days, you're just in an absolute hazy fog of just like, oh my God. But the baby's all happy and healthy, and they're all happy and healthy. But I just saw my mate stood there with a baby, and it's always so funny seeing your mate with a baby, isn't it?
Yeah. It's weird.
Because they do sort of cradle it a bit like, you know, your drunk mate with a kebab on the way home from a night out at the start. It's sort of like, that's the only thing I've ever seen him hold that delicately. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or a crate of, it's either that and a crate of beer and now a baby.
How old is he?
So exciting.
I suppose because you're a bit younger than me, you've got friends who are having their first kids, really.
Yeah, so I was 29 when I had my first, which is quite fairly young, not for my family. All my cousins had them about 17, 18. But so that was quite late. But he's a bit old. He's 37, 36 kind of thing, which is not too old.
No.
But his wife's a little bit younger. And then my younger brother's having a baby as well. So yeah, I've got mates that are just starting to have them. And then other people that have got them a bit older. So,
exciting.
But yeah, I've never really had many nearby. Like, you live quite close to your proper mates and got kids the same age, haven't you? Where our kids, the friends we've got through kids are different to the ones I had growing up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's sort of the ages didn't really match up. Whenever one had one, because we've got friends that have got kids the same age as our eldest, but then a much younger one or a much older one, and it just doesn't fit as well for play dates because there's always a kid in the corner.
Always go with your kids' friends, and you have to be friends with the parents rather than the other way around. That's what I say.
Like I said, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Josh, Recorder Club. That's what I was going to talk to you about, Recorder Club. So, you know, my eldest doesn't do any clubs.
Yes, she hates clubs.
Hates clubs, and we were like, fair enough, doesn't want to do them, whatever. Anyway, we went in, there's a new teacher at the school who's sort of doing these little catch-ups with the kids. There's not a parents' evening. It's sort of like, on a Wednesday morning, she's putting time aside if you want to go in to talk about your kid.
Yeah.
And it's quite relaxed. You don't have to go. It's quite relaxed. It's just if you want to. Anyway, we went in, and she was saying, she's lovely, and she's all doing well, and, you know, there's no problems, anything like that, and stuff. I said, she's a bit more, she's sort of like, she's a slow grower with confidence. She's sort of semi-quiet, but then as she gets into it, she gets more confident, as it, which is actually quite like me as a child. I was very quiet and timid, and then I'd grow in confidence.
Time, haven't you, though, mate?
Exactly. And then she said, yeah, it's a bit strange she's not doing any clubs at all. We said, look, we don't mind her doing clubs. We're happy to pay for like the ones you have to pay for. We're not being tight, or she just doesn't really want to do any. So we thought maybe it's just a bit of a sort of like a confidence thing or something like that. And then the teacher went, well, I'm doing recorder club. So what I'm going to do is I'll go and say to her, there's a space in my recorder club and I'd love it if you join the club.
Yeah.
Right. And sort of invite her rather than her making the decision or being forced into it by the parents. So he said, okay, it sounds great. Anyway, didn't think much of it. Then when we picked her up from school that same day, she came out like, Mummy, Daddy, I'm going to recorder club. The miss come up to me and said, there's a space and she's asked me to go in it and I'm going to do recorder club.
Look
I'm
like, at that.
Look at this turnaround. This is like unbelievable.
Incredible. Like, when she's playing recorder, headlining Glastonbury Pyramid Stage in 20 years, you'll be able to go, I knew. That was that moment. That's a teacher of an impact.
The first person to headline Glasto on a recorder.
Yeah.
Ferro Xhaka, 18 times.
Nice of them to get a woman to headline, many would say. But anyway.
Yeah, it's quite white blokey, isn't it, the old Glasto this year? So she came out buzzing, right? And she was all excited. She's like, cool, brilliant. Okay, that sounds good. Great. Well, we'll pick you up at 4 o'clock tomorrow, whenever it finishes.
Yeah.
She went, brilliant. And then the youngest is going in this little late room thing. So we get them all at 4.
The late room.
Anyway. The next morning...
That sounds like a nightclub. You're sending your oldest in with a recorder, your youngest in with some MDMA, and you're going to pick them up.
Anyway, so we're getting them at 4. The day we drop her off, the next morning, she's white. She basically goes white as a ghost when she's worried about something. Like, you can actually see the colour drained out of her face. She was like, oh, God, I don't want to go to a recorder club. I don't want to go. I don't like it. I don't want to go.
Gosh.
Like, really sort of panicking and, like, really, like, I don't want to go. I'm really nervous and all that. And I just don't want to go. I just don't want to go. And then Lou was like, well, let's just see what it's like. And she was, like, properly, like, nearly, like, getting upset about it.
And it's just at the start of the day. And she's
got
to do it at the
end. Dropping her off and she's, like, getting out of the car. And she's got to do it at the end of the day. So she's like, we've got to do it, but I'm really nervous. And then, like, Lou, and then she drops someone. Well, we'll see. And I think Lou sort of said something like, you might not have to do it if you don't want to do it, kind of thing. Yeah. And then Lou sort of regretted saying that because she actually wants her to go. So anyway, she went in, and then Lou was like, oh, God, like, I don't know what to do. And then we emailed the teacher, and Lou was going to say, she doesn't have to do it, she doesn't want to do it. But I was and we both agreed that, me and Lou, that I think actually she's worried, she wants to go because she come out buzzing.
Yeah.
She wants
but
to go.
It's that fear of the unknown.
Exactly. And I think what you want to do as a parent, for me, is a bit like, well, don't go then, don't have to do it. I can control this. I can make you happy now.
Yeah.
You're unhappy now, I can make you happy now. Right? And short term, it's a bit short-sighted. Because the thing is, then what we did, we emailed the teacher and said, look, she says she doesn't want to go. We think it's just nerves. And I think she'll absolutely love it. She was so excited last night. The only thing that's changed is the anxiety of the morning drop-off of she's got to do it. So they emailed back and said, look, if she really gets upset, we'll just put her in late room with her sister. She doesn't have to do it. However, we'll try and sort of help her get over the nerves and go into it. And then, anyway, she went in and came out, right, because we was nervous. Because I was like, do you know what, though? If she doesn't go in, she'll feel like a failure. She was excited. She'll feel like, oh, and that's how I used to feel as a kid. I'd be like... nerves, and my mum would sometimes go, yeah, don't have to do it then, but then I'll be at home being a bit of a loser, and like anyone goes, oh, did you do recorder club, go, no, I didn't do it actually, why not, oh, I didn't want to, but I actually did. I was just scared.
I don't think avoiding recorder club makes you a loser, Rob. I'd say, you know,
going does.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we was really worried, right? And then that we didn't hear anything from the teachers or whatever, and I was waiting at 4 o'clock, and she came out of the recorder club with her recorder and
amazing
her book. The happiest she
amazing
was flying. And it was recorder club to a point, but also I think it was just her getting over that worry.
Totally.
And that
totally
sense of achievement of doing something you was nervous about, but you really wanted to do. And she was buzzing. And mate, I listened to recorder, I'd say, for 4 hours nonstop when she got home. And I couldn't go, right, that's enough of that, pack it in. Then like, she did one perfectly. I'll sing along with her, and she was making me sing, and it was really cute. And,
oh,
and,
that's
and,
good.
And it's been great fun. And she was like, I want my own recorder. I want a turquoise one. The girl's, some girl in there's got a turquoise one. And I was like, well, if you go often and you do the whole term, we'll get you a new one, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But she was absolutely flying, and I was so chuffed for her.
Oh my God, that's great, Rob.
Yeah,
that's a heartwarming story.
Great. It's a heartwarming story. And then she actually said, then the next morning, 6 a.m, Dad, can I do it again? 6 a.m. she was doing it the next day, recorder club. And then she went to Lou, she went, Mum, And she blew her watch, went, I think we've got a musical star in the family. So she's flying with it now. Brilliant. But we were so close to going, don't send her, we'll get her at four.
Yeah.
And it would have been the wrong decision long term, but short term it felt like the right thing to do. And I think it's that little bit of the balance, getting the balance right of being firm but fair and cruel to be kind to a point. Because if I didn't force myself to go and do those stand-up gigs early on.
Oh my God.
And the world would be a better place. I was petrified. I'd be physically sick.
Yeah.
I'd but the world might be, but my life wouldn't be. Fuck the world. I would pace and go white and pale, but then over time you get more confident and the sense of achievement was amazing.
Get
and now
jaded.
I'm super confident in most stuff. Get jaded. Fire goes out. But we were really chuffed with that. And now she goes to Recorder Club every week. And then we're going to slowly start putting in new ones. And they were really good to school. They sort of paired her up with a friend to walk in with. And the first week she sat there in silence, like just doing the recorder. And then the teacher said second week she was asking questions and saying what note it was and really getting involved. So yeah, it's really nice to see her sort of confidence evolving.
Oh.
Which, yeah, so that's nice.
And from one child star to another, Rob. Do you like that? Do you like that link?
Oh, yes, please, Josh. Who we got?
A man who didn't want to go to diving club. We don't know that, but...
No, we don't. He really wanted to go.
He
wanted
to go to diving.
Yeah. That's what he said.
It doesn't work. But gold medal Olympian, national treasure, Devon boy, absolute legend, and now podcaster. It's Tom Daly.
And parent.
Like, crucially parent.
Out of all those things, the most important bit, parent. It's Tom Daly. Yeah.
Tom Daly.
Welcome to the podcast. Is it Sir Tom Daly? You must have some sort of OBE, MBE, Olympic winner.
I'm an Obi-Wan Kenobi, me.
Are you?
You're an OBE?
Yeah.
Well done.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. Sounds weird to say, to be honest. But there
You'll
we
be
are.
A Sir one day, won't
You'll
you?
You'll definitely be a Sir one day, Tom.
Oh, I don't know about that. Maybe. Maybe one day.
Who did you get it off?
I got it off of Prince Charles at the time in, I think it was August last year. We went to Windsor Castle.
Nice.
It was a lovely day out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And you get a plus one, plus two? How many can you get in?
Because of they were still a little bit like COVID strict, I just had a plus one. So me and my husband went down and then we had a lovely lunch afterwards. And obviously on the high street on Windsor, they must have all of the people that go and get their like awards must go in for lunch. Because when we got there, they give you a glass of champagne. And I was like, how do you know? It's like, oh, it's
amazing.
Day everybody's here. And I'm like, right, okay. But it was quite cool. But yeah.
Who got one on the day you got one? Because I imagine it's like, oh my God, they're getting one. This is such an honor. Then you turn a corner and go, they've got one.
Exactly. To be honest, it's going to sound really bad. I can't even remember who else was there. It was such a whirlwind. I feel like Professor Chris Whissy was there. Is that his name?
Yeah, I think I'd buy that.
Yeah, so did he get knighted? I think he must have gotten knighted. Yeah. I don't know, something like
and
that.
And did you... I know you have to pay for the pictures, like you've just come off a roller coaster.
Do you?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do have to pay for the pictures and the video.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, they're like, you're not allowed to take your phone in, no pictures inside, because we're going to take them for you and charge you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At graduation, how much for a video of getting your OBE?
Oh, you don't get video.
Oh, exactly. Just photos.
Just a photo.
I was just lucky that they posted it on the Royal Family Instagram, so I was like, ideal. I can take that. That's free for me.
How much was it? Can you remember how much it was? Like school photos, this is?
I think it's like 250 quid.
Whoa.
I mean, that Windsor Castle must be a steep upkeep, I must say, but apparently... You have to keep chipping in.
Wow. So, Tom, we're not just here to talk about your visits to the royal family, also about your own family.
Yes.
So what's your setup at home? You've got one son, is that correct?
Yes, I do. 4.5 he is.
Oh.
So,
At school or next year?
Yeah, at school. So he's at school right now. So, yeah, that's why there's like some kind of quiet in the house, at least.
And so is he enjoying school?
He loves school. Yeah. I think the nice thing about it is that he's like, he can be quite shy sometimes, but I think school has taught him to like make new friends and be able to do that. And also the independence of being able to like learn to read and write things and starting to understand the way that, you know, each sign actually means something. It's not just gibberish written on like, you know, symbols on a sign. So,
Yeah. We'll take him to Wales and he starts getting double. I still struggle with that.
He's like, what's going on?
A raff.
Have you taken him to the pool?
Oh yeah, he can swim, which is nice, because I think for me it's like not just about learning to swim, it's about like that water safety, able to, like, if he ever got in trouble. That was the main reason why I started in the pool, was because I lived in Plymouth, which was right by the water, so if I ever fell in, I could float on my back on the surface or do whatever I needed to do.
And then you became the world's best at falling in. You're the ultimate at falling in.
And then the world's best at fancy falling. I know, got a little bit fancier, and then like before we knew it, here I am.
Oh, but you're two Devon boys.
Yeah, yeah, this is it. I'm from Dartmoor, you're from Plymouth.
Yeah.
I'd say you're the most famous person from Devon now. Do you think that's true?
And so what about Sir Francis Drake?
Oh, but we can't get him on the pod, so...
yeah, that's true.
It's you or Dawn French, I think, the big two.
Plymouth girl.
Let's talk to you about your son. How did a role split with you and your husband, with your son?
You know, it's funny, because especially when I was, like, travelling so much with training and diving and things like that, I would be away for quite a lot of time. So there was not necessarily the most even of balances in that. But when we're both home, I like to cook. So I've always done all of the food and all of that. And I'm also, being an athlete, I was very much the one who was, like, recording, especially in the first couple of weeks. You start, like, almost like writing a training programme, really, of, like, all, like, the food, the, like, how many times he's peed, how many times he's pooed, all of that stuff. And it's like all of the things I never thought I'd be writing down in a little book, but there I was doing it anyway.
So as an athlete, you kind of approached parenting kind of almost subconsciously, like a training program.
Yeah,
basically.
I think it was mainly because it was like you read so many books and you hear about what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing, how's best to like interact with someone. And it's just like so crazy chaotic all the time that I just felt like there was that way of being able to have some kind of, I guess, control, because you feel so out of control in those first few weeks that you're like, what is this human being alien that you're holding? And how all of a sudden now I am like the prime carer. They are completely dependent on what I do and what I say and how we act with them. So it's, for me, it just allowed me to like take some kind of stuff out of my head and just put it onto paper so I didn't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah,
so it was a bit of control. Yeah. Like if you're logging it, you're doing something rather than just thinking about it and getting stressed.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you find it quite stressful then when he was little?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest stress thing for me was sleeping at night and then looking at him, and he was so peaceful, and it looks like, oh my gosh, is he breathing? And I know every parent does that.
Yeah.
Oh, constantly.
And I used to like, to the point where I was like, oh my gosh, he's too still. Yeah. And I used to like wake him up.
Oh, one sec, my daughter's calling. One sec, I'll be back in a sec. This is absolute classic. One sec, you carry on.
You talk to me, Josh's daughter's off. Ian's scurrying out the room. His daughter's off sick.
Oh,
but
bless.
Yeah, I've done that before. You wake them up to see if they're okay, and then they're awake all night, and you're like, why did I do that?
Yeah, it is scary, though. When you first become a parent, you don't know. Like, no matter how many books you read, no matter what you think you know about what your child is going to be like, you just never know what's going to happen and what turn's going to happen next. And I remember so many people giving me advice on this. You should do this, or you should try this, and this is how you should do it. And I was just like... And when people ask me what the biggest piece of advice that you could give to any other parent, and I'm like, do not listen to any other parent's advice, because like they don't know the kids. So it's like, that's for me, one of the things that I had to learn and come to terms with for sure.
Yeah, it's a bit like, you know, what you need to do with kids is, it's the same as going, do you know what you need to do with people?
Yeah, no, exactly.
You know what you need to do with adults? You're like, well, no, you don't, because you've not met that adult. You don't know what the situation is. You don't know the full story.
Exactly. Everyone's different.
Did you always want kids? Was that something that was always, or was you just focused on the diving, and then that was something you thought about when you were getting nearer the end of your career? You're only 28. I mean, you could probably still go again, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could go again. Like, that's the thing. I am the granddad in diving, to be honest. I am like one of the oldest.
But I swear you started about six.
Yeah, I started about seven. So I've been doing it for a very long time. Yeah. But, you know, I've always wanted to be a parent. I remember when I was like 16, 17 years old, when I used to go away traveling for competitions, I used to see kids' clothes and be like, I'm going to get that for my future kid. Like, I just knew that I wanted to be a parent.
Oh.
And then when I met Lance,
in
the first week that we dated, I just straight up asked him, I was like, can you see yourself getting married? And he was like, yes. And then I was like, okay, could you ever imagine yourself having kids? And he was like, yeah, sure. Like, I would want kids. And then we named our children in that first week.
Wow. So you went balls deep first date.
Literally, we broke every single rule of dating possible. Like, we just went straight for it, named.
That's
and Robbie
incredible.
Ray is here now. So, like, we stuck with the same name.
Wow.
That's so good.
Yeah.
How long between then and having the kid?
5 years, 6 years.
Yeah, oh, cool. So it's not like you sort of like decided then, you know, had a child straight away. It's like there was a bit of time between them. But I do think that's a good thing in like dating. Just being honest and totally yourself straight off the bat, it does cut out that 6 months of pretending to be someone else. And we've all done.
Exactly. Because it's like, you know, Lance was like my first ever long-term relationship, really. And like for me, I was like, if I'm going to invest my time in a relationship, because, you know, with training, I didn't really have much time at all. So if I was going to invest in something, I was like, I actually want to know that I'm going to get the outcome that I want. Again, it's very athlete mindset. Like, yeah. I like to know the plan. What am I doing? Where am I going?
Yeah.
I was like writing down things like, you know, what did he say on that day? Like, okay, yeah, I've got this. So like, for me, it's like starting, I'm learning more and more about myself as I go. I'm like, I am actually like a really controlling I like to be in control.
I'm a real control freak, and that's the thing I found most difficult, I'd say, apart from the sleep, about when we first had kids, was you've just got to surrender that control.
Yeah.
Have you learned to do that?
Yeah, massively. I think you just have to get to a point where you're like, okay, whatever happens, I think for me the big thing was like having like a disaster of a house when like they come home and there's like a tornado has hit the place, and you've got all of this like train stuff everywhere, Lego everywhere, everything is like all. And I think that was the hardest bit for me, was because again, I like to have everything like tidy and put in its place, and now it's just it's chaos all the time, and you kind of get used to it, and you kind of have to let go of that, or else you become so obsessed with it. And also you realize you don't have time to worry about all those little things anymore. You just have to I feel like the first 6 weeks in particular is like survival mode.
Oh, 6 weeks, you're being very, very kind. I'd say the first 6 months was survival mode for me.
True. I still feel like I'm in survival mode sometimes, to be honest.
And was it surrogacy you and Lance did?
Yes.
And then, excuse my naivety, but so did you get Robbie Ray like immediately? It's sort of you're there for the birth and stuff like that. Is that how it is?
Yeah, exactly. We're there from the birth. And there's lots of different ways with surrogacy, how it works in terms of the UK versus the US and what laws are there are around it and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we were there. We were present for birth, and I had first skin-to-skin contact, which was absolutely incredible, you know, because we would obviously always going to need help to have a kid, because, you know, for two gay men, I mean, no matter how hard we try, and it's not quite as easy as a bottle of wine and a good time. It takes a lot of thought. So
yeah,
but I do think that is the most magical experience, because our surrogate, who, you know, she's asked us not to name her for lots of reasons.
Oh, of course.
But she is the most special human being on the planet, and she has made our dream of having a family come true. And it really takes a special kind of human being to be so selfless to do that. And, you know, she's now like a friend for life. I mean, we speak all the time. Robbie calls her tummy buddy. So they're tummy buddies, and it's like, it's really sweet. And like, he also speaks with her kids as well. Yeah, it's a very magical thing. The whole journey is very special.
Yeah. And how much are you in contact during the pregnancy and stuff?
The whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, we text all the time, and especially like, you know, every day we will also come to the appointments, and, you know, if we couldn't be there in person because she lives in America, we would dial in on Zoom or on FaceTime or whatever. And so we were like in constant communication the whole time. And we used to send little voice notes as well. And she had these like earbuds that she could put on her tummy so that the baby could in theory hear through like stuff,
amazing.
Which is really sweet. Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
And so did you have to do the first few weeks in a hotel in America, or?
So we have a place in America because Lance, my husband, is American, and the laws are much safer for surrogate and for us in the US. So
yeah, it's a bit slow, the UK, with that kind of legislation, isn't it? It's a bit more tricky.
Yeah, it's slightly trickier to do here. Everybody knows exactly where they stand, which is important to have that clarity. And, you know, the surrogate is always in control of everything, which is very important. And it's also one of those things that you realize the importance of having everything out on the table and being able to have those open conversations. And, you know, in the US as well, in California, it's, again, the UK laws is that the surrogate can use her eggs as well. Whereas in the US, in California anyway, you have to use an egg donor. So it's not the surrogate's egg. So it's a very complicated, obviously, thing.
Yeah. One of my best friends, his husband's Brazilian, and they were looking into surrogacy, and they was chatting about it, and it can be quite costly, and all, you know, there's millions of different ways to do things.
Yes.
And they say, obviously, you get the egg donor, and then you can either, like, you know, choose one of the parents to use the sperm, or you can just sort of put it all sort of in and you don't know, and it's sort of a bit of a lottery. But my mate's like basically Irish, the most pale skin with dark hair, and then his very much darker Brazilian husband. I was like, it wouldn't be a surprise.
It'd be a bit obvious.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the thing, though. Like, once you have the eggs, you then fertilize half with, like, my sperm, half with Lance's sperm, and then you can choose which embryos you transfer. And it depends, like, how many embryos. Yeah, it's basically the same as IVF,
yes,
essentially. So it's a long process, and especially in the States where healthcare is extortionately expensive. I have no idea that if you didn't have medical insurance and you had a baby, you have to pay like $30,000 to just be in the hospital and have your baby delivered.
That's insane.
Oh my God.
Which is wild. Like, obviously, because here in the NHS, I know people complain about the NHS, but it is a lifesaver for so many. If you think we had to go private and then all of a sudden it's monopolized in a way that you just, it becomes so extortionately expensive. Oh. So, yeah.
But is there a situation where you and your husband have to have a discussion over whose sperm is kind of making it through to boot camp kind of thing?
to judges' houses.
So most of the time, well, with Robbie, for example, we didn't necessarily want to know whose was whose or anything like that. And so it was just a matter of putting two of the strongest embryos in.
Yours are going to be strong swimmers, though. You've got to be confident that yours are strong swimmers, Tom.
That's brilliant. Well, thanks for talking about that, because a lot of listeners really appreciate hearing about that. And how much do you talk to Robbie about it? Obviously, he's getting older now. He's going to school. And, like, you know, it's difficult because you still, like, I wouldn't know what the best time is to sort of explain how it works to them when they're young. Because they do sort of pick up on stuff early doors, don't they? They're not, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Whenever he's asked any questions, I just explained it exactly how it is. I think the amazing thing is that his school, that they sent a letter home saying that they were going to talk about all the different kinds of families that there are, and that you could have two mums, two dads, a single mum, single dad, a mum and a dad, like all of the different combinations that there could be, which is a really, I don't know, really special for Robbie to feel like there's actually, like, you know, there's not anything wrong with it, for example. And I think the nice thing with nowadays is there's lots of books as well that you can read to kids and have it, like, explained. For example, there's a book, like, with a kangaroo family where another pouch was used to be able to help them have their family, and like little things that you can do to explain them in a little bit more of a kid-friendly way, basically.
Yeah. How's he getting on at school? Is he enjoying it? Like, for you, you love the control, but obviously someone's looking after him all day now.
I know. He actually does love it. And it's funny because I remember the first week when I came to pick him up, he was like, "Papa, not yet. My friend's going to after school club. Why can't I go to after school club?" And I'm like, "All right, you can if you want. Like, be my guest, bless him." But no, he loves it.
Yeah, because you feel like, you know, I want to spend like more time with my kid. And if I'm at home, I'll get him at 3, whatever. And you get there and go, "I want to go to after school club." You're like, "Oh, I thought you might want to see me, but okay."
I know, because sometimes he does go to an after-school club and he goes to like karate club and things like that. And I'm like, okay. And then sometimes I am home early and I'm like, okay, like, I'm going to go pick him up and we'll go, I don't know, go and get some food or something like that. And he's like so disappointed. And I'm like, all right, okay, cool. I see where I stand now. You don't need me anymore.
You must have spent a lot of time after school clubs. Like when you were a kid, what were your kind of hours that you were keeping?
So it changed a lot, actually. So initially, where like year 7 through like year 9, I used to train Monday, Wednesday, Friday mornings, like 6 till 7:45, then go to school till 3. Then I would come home, eat, do my homework, and then I would train 5:30 to 8:30 in the evening, come home, eat again, and then do the same thing the next day. And then I got to a point where I moved schools. And then when I moved to that school, I went and did school in the morning for 2 lessons. Then I went and did a 2.5-hour training session over lunch and one of the periods where I would have a free period. And then I would go back to school for another 2 periods. And then I would go back to the pool again through till 7:30. So it was just, it was pretty intense. And it was funny because I look back on it now and it was just like, it was my reality. Yeah. It was like completely normal to me. I didn't know anything different. Yeah. So it was very intense.
You get bored of your step count up the ladder again.
I know.
Climbing that bloody
lots
ladder.
Do they not do lifts? Surely they should invent an elevator now, like, because it's quite a long way up.
Some pools do.
Do they?
Some pools do have it. In, like, for example, Berlin has one. Where else had one? In Dubai, they've got a pool with a lift. So, yeah, some of them do. But then it takes longer because then you're waiting for the lift and somebody's up there and then they pressed all the buttons going up and just because they think they're being funny. And it's like, so yeah, I mean, occasionally I would use it if I was being particularly lazy, but most of the time you just walk up. Also, because you get a bit cold else because you're getting in the cold water and then you're wet and you're out. You just kind of try and stay warm as well.
So do you think you'd want that kind of schedule for Robbie? Like, or did you enjoy it or looking, was it you driving that? Was it your parents or what was the combination of factors?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it was always me. I was pulling my parents out the door. And it was like, to me, it was like the best, my favorite part of the day was going to training. Like that was what I love to do. So it's a very, I know how difficult it is now looking back at it and all the things I sacrificed, but you know, I wouldn't change anything now. Like I'm so happy with the way that everything turned out. But you know, I think with Robbie, like if he wants to do that, great. But he hasn't really shown that much interest in sport, if I'm honest. He's very like musical and he says he wants to be a fire engine and a showman, whatever that means.
I think that's a stripper.
I reckon the second one's easier.
Magic Mike, that, isn't it?
Last week, didn't take him to Magic Mike, but we did like a few like musical trips and we went to see Frozen and Matilda and Six the musical and he like loved it all. So
Six is so good. I love Six.
Six is so nice.
I think that's the best thing I've seen at the theatre, mainly because there's no interval and it's blasted out in 80 minutes. You're in and out.
Yeah, and it's good. It is like you're at a concert. Yeah. I loved it. And Robbie, like every night now, we have to turn all the lights off and then we've got these little disco balls that he got for Christmas. And like we put the lights going on and then he does like a whole routine to the whole musical.
Amazing.
But some of the words, my kids know the words and it's quite rude.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, some of them, and he has no idea what he's saying. And I'm like, it's very, very funny. Yeah, it's very sweet to see him do it and he just absolutely loves it.
Yeah.
So like, who are we to say what he shouldn't be doing, you know?
Exactly. They're enjoying themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you, because I'd say you're now seen as 70% a diver and 30% our premier knitter. That's the way you are.
I feel like it's the other way around sometimes, to be honest.
Just to check, which did you get the OBE for? It could be one of the
I need services to knitting. But that's the next one. Maybe that's what the knighthood will be for. It'll be a knithood.
Oh, lovely stuff. Good work. Look at that.
With the knitting, have you knitted with him yet? What's the age you can start knitting?
83, normally.
He always... Yeah, exactly, 83. He has shown some interest in wanting to learn. But the thing is, like, I feel like I don't want to get him into it too soon because, like, it takes a lot of hand dexterity to be able to do it and he might get frustrated. So, like, I want him to, like, love it when he does
do
it.
Yeah, and he can do it, yeah.
I say I want him to love it. I mean, he's probably going to be like, yeah, Papa, no, this is not for me. Whenever I've made him anything, knit, initially he was like, wow, thank you. And now he's like, Papa, no more knitting.
Oh, really?
I don't need, no more.
It's quite funny, though. Like, you grow up and, like, you know, if you're knitting, you've got books about it and stuff and I'm sure there's a TV show and on the way or stuff like that where it's like he'll just be like, oh, my daddy just sort of does knitting and stuff, and then you'll be like, no, I was at the Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
I got a gold medal.
I know. He'll go to like school and be like, yeah, my papa's a knitter, and I'm like, okay, cool. Like, it's something I do. But I mean, I bloody love it. I can't get enough of it. I take it everywhere with me.
Oh, you're still obsessed with it? Still like,
still obsessed. I always have a project going. Yeah. I have like my go bag by the door where I take like, you know, my water bottle, my, you know, stuff that I need each day, and I've always got my knitting in it.
Would I say you're a bit of an obsessive? You get a bit obsessed with stuff, Tom. Is that?
I do.
Yeah. So as well as knitting, obviously your family and the diving, have you had any other things that for a brief period, they've not caught on like the knitting or the diving, but you were obsessed with, like for me and Josh, toasted sandwiches, we sometimes get into a little spree of having, but like anything else that nearly became your new knitting, or are you just all in on one thing?
Okay, so piano was another thing. I was like, just before lockdown, I was like, I'm going to learn how to play the piano. So I had a couple of piano lessons and then was like obsessed with it. And I was like doing all the like reading and like the homework that they set. And then lockdown happened and then I didn't have another lesson. So I was like, okay. And that's when I started knitting. And then knitting became my new obsession.
Right. So you could have been could have been piano, but it was knitting.
I could have been Elton Tom.
But you could have been, another great one. You could have been poolside in Tokyo with a keyboard.
I could have been.
Didn't happen.
From keyboard to diving board each time.
It's
unbelievable. The wordplay is incredible.
You're a fucking machine, Tom.
Terrible.
Well, you've got your own podcast, which is it pure puns? Because I'm hoping
it. Basically, just puns. All the puns. Yeah. No, it's actually puns. Been really fun to do, actually. Like, because I'd never, obviously never had a podcast before, and It's called Made with Love. And I basically just chat to people, like you guys chat to people about parenting. I chat to people about the things that they love to do, the things that they're passionate about, and how they're able to turn it into the thing that they do every day, which has been,
yes,
I mean, it's been really fun. Like, yeah, the people I've gotten to chat to have just been so interested. Like, yeah.
You start with Shania Twain, right?
Yeah, Shania Twain. Amazing. Is the first one.
She's amazing.
She's so fun.
You've met her as well, haven't you, Rob?
I've met her. She's unbelievable. And also, I don't think she gets the respect she deserves about how many albums she sold.
That Come On Over was the biggest selling album of the 90s or something mad like that, wasn't it?
And her backstory is unbelievable, where she
Wild.
Grew up in, like, Canada, in sort of, like, a part of a community that doesn't always get the best treatment. And then she was going off at, like, 17, 18 to follow her dreams. And then there was a terrible accident. And then she had to go home and look after her siblings. And then that, like, halted her career. And she's really... really lovely and humble. That would be an amazing episode to listen to. She's incredible.
And, like, she's so young-hearted as well and young-spirited. Like, she's, like, ready to go out and have a good time and have fun. And it's like, she's the kind of person you're like, oh my gosh, I really wish, like, you were, like, my bestie. And,
yeah.
Like, we could just, like, go out. And I said to her, like, every time I hear dunk, oh, dunk, is... dunk, 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 I'm on the table, yeah, before she even says, let's go, girl.
That is, like, it's so amazing. Like, what's your legacy? Imagine being able to walk into any room in the world and just go, ba, ba, na, 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 and I go, Josh Widdicombe. Yeah, that's it. Exactly. I love Josh Widdicombe. Love Tom Daley.
She doesn't do that, though, does she? That would be awful.
I would, if that was me.
Yeah.
Ba, ba, na, 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 na. Shania's here. Welcome.
Who else have you had on, Tom?
So we had Francis Bourgeois, Greta Thunberg, Lando Norris.
Fucking hell, we need your booker.
Yeah. It's me. I have to reach out on Instagram.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Can I ask you what you write in your DMs to Shania Twain? And I'm going to copy it and see if it works.
Does she follow you, Rob?
Oh, that's the first hurdle. I imagine not. How do I find out if she follows me?
Go on who she's following and you'll be in the list.
No,
the
she
top.
Doesn't follow me. It's a shame, isn't it? Okay. Oh. She's only following 15,000 people, so, you know.
It's funny because sometimes, like, I just reach out and sometimes I don't get a reply. But, like, for me, I always think that, like, if I ever get asked to go on a podcast, sometimes, like, you know, we met many times, but, like, when on Jonathan Ross, it kind of, like, felt,
yes,
like, it's nice if you know someone,
it's
or, like,
easier,
try to, like, reach
it?
Out,
yeah,
first, because then, yeah, it's easier, because then you're like, oh, yeah, cool, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Tom, what tips have you learned from doing the podcast? Because I think the secret to life is find out what you love to do, which isn't always easy because, you know, mm-hmm, you can get confused.
Yeah.
Find out what it is you love to do and then work out a way to monetize it,
mm-hmm,
so that it can be your income. So you know, all the bills get paid and every day you go into work, you enjoy it because it's the thing you love. That's the sort of secret to life. So,
yeah,
have you learned any ways to do that or any insight from speaking to the people? What is the common denominator?
I think persistence,
yep,
is honestly what it is. I think there's lots of, like, sometimes it gets to a point where you almost get to breaking point and you feel like you can't do it. But, like, if you are truly passionate about and you truly love what you do, it never feels like work. And no matter if you have to do other things, yeah, on the side as you're going, it just creates this... I think everybody should have that little thing, even if it's like, if you're doing your job and it's not necessarily something that you want to be doing, if you've got something outside of it that you love, like diving was what I love to do. And then I made that into the thing that I did every day. And then because that became like my job in,
yeah,
a way, I always had that extra thing on the outside, which then became knitting. And then, you know, now knitting has kind of like taken that forefront. And I just think there's always something nice to have outside of what you're,
yeah,
paid to do. That you always have something.
Yeah.
Outside of what you're paid to do, that's like kind of becomes your superpower. The way, the thing that you can do that is you look forward to doing at the end of each day, the thing that you kind of gets you out of your head, gets you out of your own way. And I think that's the key.
I remember someone saying to me, you should take up, like, a really good thing is to do something that you're not that good at,
yeah,
so that it's just a hobby. Like, if you're trying to be really good at the thing that you're doing for your hobby as well, then it's going to turn into the same kind of work situation as your job,
yeah, like,
if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, people get obsessed with golf and try and become, like, they really want to be good at golf. And I'm like,
yeah,
well, actually, if you put that effort into what your day job was, then you could just play golf loads because you wouldn't be working as much.
Yeah, there is that as well.
What's your diary like, you know, and how much can you see your son now, say, like, when you're, you know, obviously you're doing your podcast and media interviews, and but it's not as intense as training.
No.
So what does your week look like this week with your son compared to next week you start training for the Olympics? How different is it, like, commitment-wise?
Well, it's the kind of thing where I can fit everything in that I'm doing now from between the hours of dropping Robbie off to school and picking him up.
Yes.
So,
yeah,
I'm then able to spend all the time with him in the world. And whereas when I was training, I would, like, he was at nursery when I was training. So I would drop him off at daycare at like 8 o'clock, then go straight to training, start training 8:30 till 11. Then I would have lunch between and do any kind of interviews or anything that I needed to do from like 11:30 till 1. And then I'd start training at 1:15 till like 3:30, 3:45, sometimes 4 o'clock. Then I'd go pick Robbie up at 4:30 on the way home, make him dinner, make me dinner, put him to bed, and then I was off to bed. So it's like, yeah. I actually feel like I get proper time with him now. And like, even weekends, I can go out and do things.
And it's such a precious time, this age, between like 4 and 12.
Rob, don't talk us out of another gold medal here, mate.
Yeah, no, look, let's break this down. Tom, do you want two gold medals on the wall?
Needs
or do you want a son that comes around and sees you on a Sunday? That's the options. And the answer is fucking gold. Go and get it, son. Bring back the gold. Fuck the kid off. Get the gold.
That's the thing. Like, I do think that in Tokyo, I think that was one of the reasons why we were able to win the gold as well, is because like you have that perspective on what matters most. So then you don't put the same amount of pressure on yourself, because
yeah.
in 2008, 12, 16, I almost tortured myself through the whole yeah. experience because I wanted it so badly.
Yeah.
But then when you realize, actually, I've got all of the most important things in my life. I've got my family, and they're going to love me whether I do well or not. So just go and have fun and enjoy it. And like, you've worked hard for it at this point. Yeah. So just do your thing.
And is there part of you that would like him to see you? Because now, obviously, in Tokyo, he wouldn't have been aware really what was going on.
Yeah, he was in Canada. He was asleep.
If you went to Paris, I don't know whether he could be in the venue, but he could certainly watch it on TV, and yeah. it'd be an incredible thing to see. Do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, he could be in the venue. And then I also think, like, well, the funny thing is, like, Lance and my mum were in Canada because Lance was shooting a TV show out there. And so I think it was like 3 a.m. or something like that. So Robbie was on the sofa, but kind of asleep. And there's this video of Lance screaming when we won. And then, like, Robbie is like, wakes up kind of like dazed, like, what on earth is going on? So he does bring it up some, and he understands that I went to the Olympics and I dived and, but yeah, it would be kind of cool to have it be like an actual like core memory that he was able to see something.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask Tom, now your son's in school, is are you making an effort with the parents? Are you in WhatsApp mm-hmm. groups? Are you going for parent
groups.
Drinks? Have you been to the parties yet? Because it gets quite political. I'm not going to lie, Tom. How are you finding school parents?
To give you an idea, I've thrown myself in it. I'm really popular and I love it. And Rob hates all the other parents at his school. So that's the two ends of the spectrum.
That's not true. No, that is really bad, actually. I hang about with the school parents at my school more than you. I play football with them on the Sunday. We have kids over for sleepovers. I chat to everyone in the playground. I haven't as much with my youngest because I was away when she started school in Australia, but I'm making amends for that and I'm taking her to all the new parties. So actually, Josh, go fuck yourself. Sorry, Tom. How are you getting on?
Tom, do you think Shania Twain would put up with that kind of interviewing style? I don't think you should drop into her DMs,
that doesn't
Rob.
Impress me much, that question, actually.
Oh, I don't know. Sure. I'm in the WhatsApp groups. They can be very intense. Everything can be very serious sometimes. And I'm just like, you know what? They're kids. They'll figure it
out.
And it will be fine.
Yeah.
And I think the nice thing about this is, I guess it's nice, but also a little bit like not nice, is it seems like the parents have decided like not to do birthday parties for their kids.
Oh, at all? Interesting. Ooh.
So Robbie's...
Or you haven't been invited.
Yeah, or that, or I've not been invited. Robbie's there at home. I'm like, Papa, they had a party and I wasn't invited. No, but when we first started, the first two weekends had birthday parties, but that was because we knew the kids before they started and it was only a handful of kids.
Right.
So yeah. It seems like each kind of birthday that might happen, they do like a very like little, like just their closest mates.
Oh,
kind of.
They're not doing a class party.
Oh, that's
good.
Yeah,
they don't do class parties, which because there's
so
two classes
many.
In the year group and they kind of mix between like classes. So it's like 60 kids. So it becomes like probably a bit impossible to like try and invite everyone and like be politically correct. So I think people have just kind of done their own thing.
Oh, that's good.
Have you been out with drinks with the mums and dads?
They actually had like a dad's drinks thing last week, but I was away.
Right.
So I couldn't go.
That's quite fun because you and Lance can double up on that.
I know. We're both there.
That's like a date night for you guys. Just go and hang with the lads.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're off out.
Yeah.
But it's like we did like the school fairs, like they did the Christmas fair and then they did like the nativity thing. That was sweet. That was really sweet. But yeah, I don't know. It's not been as...
It takes a little while to settle down, I think. The reception year is always a bit... Everyone's trying to work out what everyone's doing and stuff.
And as a recognisable face, have you been roped into doing anything? Have you been asked to bring in your gold medal and talk about inspiration or anything yet?
The one really sweet thing that happened was, like, I think year five or year six had to do like a creative writing piece about someone that inspired them.
Oh.
And one of them chose me as their like person. Amazing. And they wrote this little letter. And I don't think they knew that like Robbie went to the school or anything like that. And then the teacher like pulled me aside and just was like, I just want to let you know, a year six wrote this really, really special letter and like, you can read it. And then bless, they were so sweet. And then I got to go and meet them and it was just very sweet. So like little things like that. And like, you know, you don't really realize, but it was special.
Because if that had happened with Rob, they'd have gone, do you want to meet him? And Rob would have gone, no, I'm not interested, mate.
No, I'll pop my head into reception every day. Any inspiring letters about me? Anyone wants to chat? No, because sure. I sort of grew up around this area and sort of done quite a lot actually, considering where I've come from. Yeah. But they're not. No, they're not. Okay, no. But yeah, I always pop in and just find out now and again.
Yeah, just have a little ask. Yeah.
The thing is, though, you must feel that, you know, you're a normal person like everyone else, Tom. You get up in the morning sometimes, you're a bit tired or whatever. You had a late night and you just chuck on a tracksuit and get them into school, and you feel almost a bit pathetic. And you just want to get back and have a coffee to sort of crack on with the day. Do you always feel like you're an inspiring Olympic hero? Or do sometimes you feel like a piece of shit?
Yeah, because when he puts on a tracksuit, it's his Olympic tracksuit every time.
I love an Olympic tracksuit. I love tracksuits. Imagine having one that was, you wore at the Olympics. But then for you, it's normal. It's like you went there, you did that, and then obviously the kids find it inspiring. How does it feel when you have to go and talk to them? Is part of you sort of... Because you don't want to fall into the trap of sort of believing your own hype and like, yes, child, I am an inspiring person. But part of you must feel like, I'm just a bloke that sort of really liked diving and did it loads and I don't really know what to say.
Yeah, no, honestly, especially now that I've not been like training as much, like there's been many a time where I've like gone to like an event, like, you know, they always do those award shows in the middle of the week, don't they?
Yeah.
So there's been many a times where I've woken up like bedhead and my eyes are like half shut and like I've, you know, might have had a couple of beverages the night before, and then I rock up and win school and then I've got my nails painted and like I'm hobbling in like a mess and it's just but then that's when I feel the pressure to put on a brave face and they're like, oh, like I've got my tracksuit on. Oh, are you going training? And I'm like, yeah, I am about to go for a run to my bed to lay down.
Yeah. That's the advantage you've got, because I went to the gym the other day before pickup, so I turned up in my shorts and my trainers, and everyone was like acting like I was, you know, oh, have you been to the gym? Oh no, like they didn't have respect for me. Couple more questions. Number one, having listened to us, do you think that Shania Twain, we'd be her kind of shtick?
She'd love this show.
I think she'd love it. She's up for a good time.
She'd love it. We've got to get Twain on.
She's up for a good time.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
Rob, you've got to slip into her DMs.
Well, I'll get the TV company that booked her to do Rob and Romesh to message.
We always end with the same question, which is what one thing... Well, it's a kind of two-part question. But there's the positive one, which is what one thing does your partner do, which kind of you think... That's the reason I'm with him. An incredible parent. You know, I couldn't do that. And then what's the one thing that annoys you about your partner's parenting that maybe you haven't said to them because it's too awkward, but were they to listen, this would be your chance to communicate it to them.
The thing that Lance is amazing at when it comes to Robbie is... Obviously, Lance being a creative, he is so good with Robbie when it comes to like language stuff and having conversations. Like one of the one things that he always said to Robbie when he was like, you know, in terrible twos and like he had his enough words to say, he would always say, use your words, Robbie, use your words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Robbie never plays up with Lance in the like crying bit because Lance played this whole gimmick of like, oh, I don't understand that language. What language is like confused whenever he would scream or shout? Then all of a sudden now, like he'll be screaming and shouting at me and then he'll turn to Lance and be like, Papa doesn't know. So like he like definitely plays us off each other in that way.
Papa doesn't know sounds like a Motown song.
Exactly, it does. Yeah. So I guess the child psychology, I guess, is a good thing that Lance has got like in that way and is has very like deep conversations with Robbie. And I think the one thing that I'm always a bit like, well, waking up in the morning. He's not very good at the waking up in the morning.
He can't do mornings.
Really? Rose isn't good at waking
up. I can't do mornings.
I'm the morning guy.
It's annoying being the morning guy, right? Because
I have to be the morning guy.
It's not my fault that I'm the morning guy, but I pay a tax for it, which is I'm up making the tea for being the morning guy. Sorry, it's your problem, not mine.
I mean, we've also taught Robbie how to make the coffee.
Does he?
What?
He makes coffee.
At five? alive.
And the crazy thing is, like the other day,
froth the milk.
Well, he doesn't froth the milk. He just makes the espresso, basically. Also, the other day, I've got a picture of it. He was emptying the dishwasher.
No.
I came up the stairs and I was like, what are you doing, Robbie? He was like, I'm emptying the dishwasher, Papa. And I was like, okay. And then the other morning, I came up, he made himself a salmon and cream cheese bagel.
No way. What's going on?
Like, literally, I was like, Robbie, like, what on earth is that, Papa? I was hungry.
He's our middle-aged of all sea, Robbie. Little bagel on the go, espresso.
Honestly, it was so funny. I couldn't believe it. Because we got this bagel cutter for Christmas because he loves bagels. So he was able to like cut his own bagel with like thing where you like push down onto it.
Oh, wow.
And then, yeah, he toasted it, spread the thing on, and then he got the salmon out the fridge and just chucked it on top and off he went.
Unbelievable. Well
what a
done.
Kid.
Yeah, bless him.
Tom, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you
it's
for having me.
It's been a joy. Your podcast made with love.
Yeah.
First episode with Shania Twain, I'm going straight to listen to. What should I listen to second? Who's the one after Twain that
you... Well,
you'd...
the thing is, we're releasing them weekly. I mean, Greta was a great... I mean, and Greta had like a really interesting fact about her family as well, which I had no idea about, which was an interesting... And I won't say what it is.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I love
that's
it. That's
good.
What a tease. Good work.
Look at that.
Oh, a little tease for you.
He's preparing for his post-diving career. He knows how to... Yeah. He knows how to play the media.
What a little tease that was. Thank you very much, Tom. It's been absolutely brilliant. Good luck with the podcast.
Thanks, Tom.
Oh, thank you very much.
Cheers, Tom. He's been brilliant. Thanks, mate. Tom Daly. Love Tom Daly.
What a legend.
Great kid. He's 28.
Great kid.
Heart
of gold.
I still think of him as a child. I think it's because that's when he was famous, when he was like a teenager, wasn't it?
Yeah. But then also there's that other thing where you go, you're 28. You've been famous forever. I think every gold medal winner is entitled to that one last games where they really shouldn't have done it.
Absolutely. That'll be me when I do Family Fortunes when I'm 65. Yeah. I couldn't give a shit.
I reckon you'll be Family Fortunes by the time you're 40, Rob. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, I'd love it.
Made with love.
Tom Daly, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Hello and welcome to the trailer of Oh My Dog with me, Jack D.
And me, Sean Walsh.
In our new weekly podcast, we'll be revealing the most intimate, ridiculous details of our relationships with our beloved dogs.
I have the delightful, spirited Mildred Barrett, who is a cockapoo.
Yeah, my streetwise best friend is Dolly, the long-haired chihuahua that we rescued.
We'll be asking the all-important questions like, does your dog sleep in your bed? Do you let your dog kiss you on the mouth?
And what voice do you use when you're speaking to your dog?
With him in the morning, son. Oh, come here, I'll give you the squeezes and give you the rubby bellies because he's in the morning.
What are you doing? What are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing the voice that I used to speak to Mildred.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
We'll also get our equally dog-obsessed guest.
What are you doing?
I'm carrying on with the trailer.
I know that you speak to Dolly with a voice. Do the voice.
I'm not going to do that now. I'm going to
do the voice. We want to hear the voice.
Hello, my darling. Have you been a good girl today? What are you going to do? Have you missed me? Have you missed me? Good girl.
It's not funny. It's how I talk to her. Don't mock it. Over the coming weeks, you'll be hearing from the likes of Jonathan Ross, Amanda Abingdon, and Sarah Cox about their faithful four-legged friends.
Make sure you subscribe now so you don't miss our first episode on Monday the 6th of March. You are very much part of the podcast too, so get in touch by emailing us at hello@omdpod.com or follow us on Instagram at omdpod.
I'm Ivo Graham.
And I'm Alex Keeley.
We're stand-up comedians who love music.
And we'd like to tell you about our new podcast, Gig Pigs.
Alex and I have been watching live music together for years, so we've decided to compromise this hobby, and potentially our friendship, by turning it into a project.
Every episode, we'll be going to a gig, and then discussing it afterwards with the friends who came along to third wheel us.
Asking questions like, did you enjoy the gig? Did you check the setlist in advance? Did you appreciate the artist's mid-song banter?
Did this gig profoundly change your relationship with live music?
Was the cloakroom queue prohibitively long?
We've been to Franz Ferdinand with Rose Matafeo and Emma City, Kendrick Lamar with Phil Wang, and The Cure with Cellular AB.
And next month, we're going with Ed Gamble to watch Napalm Death.
Episodes are out from this Thursday and every Thursday thereafter until attending live music once a week with a different guest becomes logistically impossible.
We have no idea how soon that could be, so join us now by going to your preferred podcast platform and searching Gig Pigs.